जय गोपी जन बल्लभ गिरिवर दारी गोपी जन बल्लभ गिरिवर दारी जसोर नंदन व्रज जन रंजन जसोर नंदन जमुना किया जमुना किया जय राधा पंजाबी गोपी जन बाबा गिरिवर गोपी जन बाबा गिरिवर जसोर नंदन व्रज जन रंजन जसोर नंदन जन यमुना किया यमुना किया जय विष्णु पार्थम हम सौभाग्य इस फाउंडर आचार्य श्रील प्रभुपाद की जय वैष्णविंद की जय नामाचार्य श्रील हरिदास ठाकुर की जय प्रेम श्री कहो श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री द्वैत गिराधर श्री दास हरि गो भक्तविंद की जय श्री श्री राधा कृष्ण गौर गोपीनाथ श्याम कुंड राधा कुंड गिरि गोवर्धन की जय वृंदावन धाम की जय मथुरा धाम की जय नवद्वीप मायापुर धाम की जय जगन्नाथपुरी धाम की जय गंगामय जमुना देवी की जय भक्ति देवी की जय तुलसी महारानी की जय अद्वैत भक्तवृंद की जय गौर प्रेमानंद ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज
हे कृष्णा
All glory to the assembled devotees.
Hare Krishna.
All glory to the assembled devotees.
Hare Krishna.
All glory to Sri Guru and Govinda. All glory to Sri Prabhupada. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasadaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vinata Swami Chinam. Namaste Saraswati Deva Gopani Pachani Vasesa Sri वंदेहम श्री गुरु श्री चापरकम श्री गुरुवैष्णव श्री रूपम स्वागजातम सहजनावनकांडकम संसुजीव साधवैतम सवरीतम भोजना सहिता कृष्ण चैतन्य श्री राधा कृष्ण प्रभु सहजनावनता श्री विशाखम ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
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 Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 9, the passing of Bhishma Dev in the presence of Lord Krishna, text 37. Swanigamam apaya mat parignam
Svanigamam apahayamat pratigyam.
Vittam madhikartum avaputaratasa.
Ratam adhikartum avaputaratastaha.
Vitarita charano bhayayacharaju.
Dritarata charano bhayacharadgur.
Hariyarivahantum nibham gatotara.
Hariyarivahantum ibham gatotariya.
Svanigamam apaya. Svanigamam apahaya mat pratignam.
Svanigamam apahaya mat pratignam.
Vittamari kartam avapluta ratasa.
Vittam adhikartum avapluto ratastaha.
Vitarata charano vyayat chaladgur.
Vitarata charano vyayat chaladgur.
Hari rivahantum ibham gato tariya.
Hari rivahantum ibham gato tariya.
Please chant.
Svanigamam apahayan mat pratigyam.
Svanigamam apahayan
mat pratigyam. Ritam adhikartum avapruto ratastha.
Ritam adhikartum avapruto ratastha.
Dhritarita charano vyayach chaladgur. Harir Iva Huntum Ibhangato Tariya.
Harir Huntum Ibhangato Tariya. Matparigyam.
Svanigamam Apahayan Matpratigyam.
Ritam adhikartum avapluto ratastaha.
Ritam adhikartum avapluto ratastaha.
Tatcharano vyayacharadgur.
Dritarata charano vyayacharadgur.
Hari avantumi bangat.
Hariyaha. Hariyaha. Eva hantum ibhang gato tariya.
Svanigam mam apaya mat pratigyam.
Svanigam mam apahayan mat pratigyam.
Vitam adhikartum avapluto ratastaha.
Vitam adhikartum avapluto ratastha.
Dhritarata charano vyayacharadgur.
Dhritarata charano vyayacharadgur.
Harir iva hantum ibham gato tariyah.
Harir iva hantum ibham gato tariyah.
This is Srimad Bhagavatam 1937 in Hawaii, May 11, 2011. Svanigamam.
Svanigamam.
Own truthfulness.
Own truthfulness.
Upahaya.
Upahaya. Upahaya.
Or nullifying.
Or nullifying.
Mat pratignam.
Mat pratigyam.
My own promise.
My own promise.
Ritam.
Ritam.
Factual.
Factual.
Adhi.
Adhi.
More.
More.
Cartoon.
Cartoon.
For doing it.
For doing it.
Apaplutaha.
Avaplutaha.
Getting down.
Getting down.
Ratastaha.
Ratastaha.
From the chariot.
From the chariot.
Dritta.
Dritta.
Taking up.
Taking up.
Ratta.
Ratta.
Charanaha.
Charanaha.
Wheel.
Wheel.
Yeah.
Went hurriedly.
Went hurriedly.
Chaladgu.
Chaladgu.
Trampling the earth.
Trampling the earth.
Hari.
Hari.
Lion.
Lion.
Eva.
Eva. Eva.
Like.
Like.
Huntum.
Huntum.
To kill.
To kill.
Ibam.
Ibam.
Elephant.
Elephant.
Gata.
Gata.
Leaving aside.
Leaving aside.
Utariya.
Utariya.
Covering cloth.
Covering cloth.
Let me go ahead and interrupt now. Prabhu, so we have over two dozen devotees on right now, and most of you are on Skype directly, so I'm asking if you could please mute yourself so that there won't be any background noise on for most of the class. So if we could all mute at this time. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
Okay. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Fulfilling my desire and sacrificing his own promise, he got down from the chariot, took up its wheel, and ran towards me hurriedly, just as a lion goes to kill an elephant. He even dropped his outer garment on the way. So this is, of course, Bhishma's meditation as he's leaving his body. He's particularly meditating on his rasa with Krishna, although Bhishma Dev knows that the gopis have the highest rasa with Krishna from an objective perspective. He's fixed in his own rasa. So here he's meditating on that chivalrous rasa he has with Krishna. And Prabhupada is going to give us, in the purport, the background story and the mood of the sportive, chivalrous mood of the Kshatriyas. Purport. The Battle of Kurukshetra was fought on military principles, but at the same time in a sporting spirit, like a friend's fight with another friend. Duryodhan criticized Bhishma Dev, alleging that he was reluctant to kill Arjuna because of fraternal affection. A Kshatriya cannot tolerate insult on the principle of fighting. Bhishma Dev therefore promised that the next day he would kill all five Pandavas with special weapons made for the purpose. Duryodhan was satisfied, and he kept the arrows with him to be delivered the next day during the fight. By tricks, Arjuna took the arrows from Duryodhan, and Bhishma Dev could understand that this was a trick of Lord Krishna. So he took a vow that the next day Krishna would have to take up weapons himself, otherwise his friend Arjuna would die. In the next day's fighting, Bhishma Dev fought so violently that both Arjuna and Krishna were in trouble. Arjuna was almost defeated. The situation was so tense that he was about to be killed by Bhishma Dev the very next moment. At that time, Lord Krishna wanted to please his devotee Bhishma by keeping Bhishma's promise, which was more important than his own. Seemingly, he broke his own promise. He promised before the beginning of the Battle of Kurukshetra that he would remain without weapons and would not use his strength for either of the parties. But to protect Arjuna, he got down from the chariot, took up the wheel of the chariot, and hurriedly rushed at Bhishma Dev in an angry mood, as a lion goes to kill an elephant. He dropped his covering cloth on the way, and out of great anger, he did not know that he had dropped it. Bhishma Dev at once gave up his weapons and stood to be killed by Krishna, his beloved Lord. The fighting of the day was thus ended at that very moment, and Arjuna was saved. Of course, there was no possibility of Arjuna's death because the Lord himself was on the chariot. But because Bhishma Dev wanted to see Lord Krishna take up some weapons to save his friend, the Lord created this situation, making Arjuna's death imminent. He stood before Bhishma Dev to show him that his promise was fulfilled and that he had taken up the wheel. Swanigamam apayaya mat parignam ritam adhikartum avapruto ratasta dritta rita charano vyayayach chaladgur harir ivahantum ivam gato tariyaha. Fulfilling my desire and sacrificing his own promise, he got down from the chariot, took up its wheel, and ran towards me hurriedly, just as a lion goes to kill an elephant. He even dropped his outer garment on the ground. So the way that we attain the perfection of life, the fulfillment of all of our desires, is to reconnect with Krishna. We're trying in the material world to fulfill all of our desires by connecting separately with Krishna's energy in the form of material objects, having the right house, having the right clothes, having the right degree, having the right car, or with other jivas separately from Krishna, having the right relationship with my husband, my children, my friends, my boss, my coworkers, my country, and so forth. But all of those are trying to connect separately with the parts. Bhishma Dev here, exemplifying the prema bhakta, he is understanding that the way he is going to be satisfied is to reconnect with Krishna. And the devotees have desires in connection with Krishna. Prabhupada starts off here, fulfilling my desire. Fulfilling my desire. Of course, here, if you look at the word for word, you don't see that there's some specific mention by Bhishma Dev in terms of his own desire. But it was a desire of Bhishma Dev. And here Prabhupada explains at the end of the purport. Because Bhishma Dev wanted to see Lord Krishna take up some weapon to save his friend. So Bhishma Dev wants to see the Lord in a fighting spirit. And we understand this. I mean, it may seem a little odd. Why does he want to see the Lord in a fighting spirit? You know, we may be able to understand how Yasoda wants to see Krishna as a beloved child. Those of us who are parents, we know the pleasure from seeing the cute, loving child. Those of us who've fallen in love with someone, we know the pleasure from having a husband or wife or beloved. We know the pleasure of friendship. We know the pleasure of having some boss who's a really first-class boss that we can work under, how satisfying that is. We may say, well, why does he want to fight with Krishna? But we also do that. For example, all over the world, people engage in some kind of sporting activities. You know, in some parts of the world, it's cricket, and in some it's soccer, and some it's ice hockey, and some places it's football, whatever. But to have some sporting, we like to watch other people sport, and we also engage in sporting. Even if it's among our friends, we have some mock fight. We like to see some repartee like that. If it's done, as Prabhupada says here, in a sporting spirit, if it's not done out of animosity, if it's not done out of envy, then it's very pleasurable. So, of course, this chivalrous fighting may be part of another rasa, one of the
primary
rasas.
This conference is being recorded.
Just like the cowherd boys in the process of playing with Krishna, they also have mock fights with Krishna. The gopis even fight with Krishna verbally, having some verbal repartee. But here we see that this chivalrous mood is Bhishma Dev's primary inclination with Krishna. It's his primary way that he likes to see Krishna, in some sportive activity where they're, you know, on opposite sides fighting with each other. And this is also, as we say, very pleasurable. We play competitive games with people that we love. So, of course, this is at a little higher level than something like chess or volleyball. They're actually fighting with arrows. But you can see the sportive nature in the fact that as soon as Krishna actually picks up the chariot wheel and runs toward Bhishma, it says here that Bhishma Dev at once gave up his weapons and stood to be killed by Krishna, his beloved Lord. You can see this is on the platform of love. if it's on the platform of animosity, then they fight to the bitter end, to the death and stuff. But that's not actually what's going on here. It's a game. It's guerrilla. It's kripton. It's an exchange of love. And one of the most astonishing things here is that Krishna dropped his outer garment. So, gata utariyaha. Utariyaha, getting up on the outside, this covering cloth. It fell aside. And as the Prabhupada says in the purport, that he didn't even notice it. He says, out of great anger, he didn't know that he had dropped it. So when one is feeling some very intense emotion, one loses one's awareness of the things that one normally pays a lot of attention to. So just like the gopis when they're running to see Krishna, they're not aware of how they're dressing themselves. It's not that they're purposely putting their saris on upside down. They're not aware of it. They're so much focused on seeing Krishna. And when Krishna sees them coming to him dressed like that, he's very happy. It's interesting because generally a man is happy at seeing the woman he loves dressed very nicely to please him. You know, if you're going to go out with your wife someplace, you're going to go out to the, like, Nisingadev's appearance day coming out, you're going to go to the Nisingadev festival, and you look at your wife, and she's only got kajal on one eye and only one earring, and her sari's upside down and inside out and half hanging off, you know, you wouldn't be very happy. You'd say, what's wrong with you? Go get yourself dressed. But Krishna was very happy to see the gopis like that. Why? Because it meant that they were so absorbed in love for him that they neglected what to a young girl is arguably one of the most important things. I mean, I remember when I moved from age 12 to age 13, all of a sudden I was spending a half an hour every day fixing my hair. Whereas until I was 13, I never cared about this. We have a 9-year-old girl here that we have to say, comb your hair. Comb your hair. She doesn't care if it's tangled and knots, but I guarantee you that once she gets to be 13 or 14, you won't have to tell her to comb her hair. You'll have to say, get out of the bathroom and stop fixing your hair. So young girls, they naturally want to dress very attractively, want to dress very carefully. A young girl doesn't go out of the house unattractively dressed. I mean, unless she's like a hippie girl, in which case her attractive dress is a different nature. But the point is that a girl wants to dress attractively for the kind of boy that she's interested in, something very important to her. Her bodily attraction is her wealth. But they didn't care about that. What's most important, they didn't care about. So that's love. Love is when what's most important to you, when what's most significant to you, you actually forget about. Okay? You just forget about it because you're so absorbed in feeling. This is not a repression of one's needs. You know, we may try to artificially imitate that in this world. Well, I'm just going to forget about what I want, and I'm just going to forget about what I need, and I'm going to artificially, selflessly serve the other person. And you know, we try to do that. Women particularly try to do that. But that doesn't work. You know, eventually your own needs will surface, and you'll have some kind of an explosion or a meltdown or, you know, in the what about me place. But in actual love, one can do that. So it's not only that Krishna's devotees do that, but Krishna also does. And Krishna loses all awareness of the self and what he likes when he's overwhelmed with love for his devotees. Now you can say, oh, wait a minute, this doesn't say out of great love. It says out of great anger. But anger, spiritual anger, is simply another flavor of love. And again, we have some experience of that. The example that I always give is when my youngest son, when he was 9 and he didn't yet know how to swim, without telling us, he took out our inflatable boat with his friend and went across the street and went in the river with the boat. And that was a river that led to a waterfall. You know, and he didn't know how to swim, and there was a waterfall. And, you know, we just looked around, where was he? You know, 10 minutes somehow or other. He had disappeared, and one of the other kids, oh, he took the boat across the street. You know, and when I found him in the boat about to go over a waterfall without knowing how to swim, I wasn't just, oh, don't do that. I was angry. Why are you a crazy boy? What are you doing? So that anger was out of love. I mean, here, Krishna's anger is out of love for Arjuna, particularly, that how are you threatening Arjuna? Any of us who have somebody that's dependent on us for protection, a child or a wife or some subordinate, if somebody threatens them or attacks them, we become very angry out of love. And this, but this was also mixed with Krishna's love for Bhishma, because he knew that Bhishma wanted to see him that way. Bhishma wants to see me fighting. You can't fight without anger, as Prabhupada says in another place. Not possible. What kind of fighting is that? Wimpy fighting. You know, half-hearted fighting. There has to be some actual anger. That doesn't mean it's not sportsman-like. You know, you're honoring the sport. The fighting is a sport. There's no animosity. The anger is not filled with animosity. The anger is not filled with envy. I'm not trying to conquer the other person. It's simply fun. So this anger was really a manifestation of love for Arjuna and love for Bhishma. And Krishna was so caught up in that love that... Am I still on? He was so caught up with that love that he forgot himself. And that's what we're all looking for. God is looking for that too. To forget ourselves in love. To lose ourselves in love. To just be so swimming with love for the other person that our self-awareness vanishes. The most pleasurable thing. So Krishna also wants to experience that. I had one sannyasi say, if we say that God never falls, but he falls in love. We have this expression in English, to fall in love. Because I was saying that in some part of the world, I think it was Russia, and they didn't have such an expression. They couldn't translate falling in love. Maybe it was Germany. Anyway, some other part of the world. And I said, do you have any kind of expression of the madness of love? They said, yes, we call it, you lose your head. Head is falling off. So one becomes illusioned, in a sense. You know, we talk about the four defects, to make mistakes, to be illusioned, cheating propensity, imperfect senses. And in Vaikuntha, those are not, in the Brahman and Paramatma realization, in Vaikuntha, those are not there. But in Krishna's human-like pastimes, as Krishna in Dwarka, in Mathura, and in Vrindavan, and even to some extent in Ayodhya, we see the original spiritual perfect form of these four defects, so-called defects, the defect-less form of these defects, where Krishna is looking at Radharani and tries to milk a bull. You know, Radharani's churning an empty pot of yogurt. The gopis dress backwards, and here Krishna's unaware. You may say, well, what's the big deal about Krishna being unaware? But if we read Rupa Goswami's description of Krishna's qualities, one of them, one of my favorite, in fact, is that he's a very meticulous dresser. Krishna always wants to be dressed very nicely. In fact, especially when he's fighting, we have these examples before Krishna jumped in the lake to fight with Kaliya. He gets on the Kadamba tree and he tightens his cloth, his belt cloth, make sure that his belt is in order. And it's also described, I believe, in Ananda Vrindavan Champu, that he takes his curls and puts them all up inside of his turban and readjusts his turban. So he makes sure before he's going to fight with Kaliya, which is interesting, he's going to fight with him in the water. So first of all, in a fight, your clothes are likely to get messed up, and in fight in the water, they're doubly likely to get messed up. But he wants to make sure everything is in order. We also see this before Krishna fights with the seven bulls in order to win the hand of Satya as his wife, that he's adjusting his cloth. And this is something that he's regularly doing. In fact, Krishna gets dressed many times in a day in a temple with deity worship. The deities are generally dressed twice a day, once in day clothes and once in night clothes. And in some temples, at least the Utsav deities, the smaller deities, are dressed a third time in the afternoon. So they may, the small deities, at least their jewels are taken off for the midday rest and then put back on again. We see sometimes on festival days in large temples like Vrindavan, the deities may get dressed few times in a day, once for the duty reading, once for the afternoon, after the afternoon rest, and once again in the evening. If we read about Krishna's Asta Kaliya Lila, we find that he's bathing or swimming several times in a day, and each time he's getting dressed again. In fact, he may get dressed again and have his ornaments replaced after each meal even. So many, many times in a day, Krishna's putting on new clothes and new ornaments, having everything put in its proper place. And this is one of his qualities, that he's always immaculately dressed. And by the way, this is also the quality that the perfected soul has, not to the same extent as Krishna, but in a minute degree, this quality of being a very fastidious, very careful dresser, always aware of where his clothes are, if his clothes are disarrayed or soiled, wanting to change his clothes and have new ornaments. Of course, Krishna is also described as a very nice dresser in that he knows how to dress others, and particularly Srimati Radharani, and he's expert at decorating her, drawing pictures on her body. You know, we have our imitation today with the tattoos and things like that, but Krishna is very expert at that. So this is an important quality of Krishna, that he's an expert dresser. It's something he really cares about. It's something he's very aware of. It's something that he's doing many, many times in the course of the day, getting dressed and ornamented properly. It said that he looks like a theatrical actor or a theatrical dancer, how brilliantly he's dressed and decorated. But here we see that that quality is not manifest. How interesting that as Krishna's running to Bhijma, we don't see this quality. He drops his cloth. And he's not even aware that he drops the cloth. He makes no effort to retrieve it or to fix it. And it's just gone. It's just not there. He's not properly dressed. So even among all of Krishna's qualities, his quality of Bhakti Vatsal is the highest. It trumps all of his other qualities. So that whatever other quality he has, Krishna is also truthful. In fact, Param Satyam Dhimahi. We meditate on him as the absolute truth. He is completely truthful. There's no question of anything false in him. In fact, the definition of false is anything that is opposed to him or anything that doesn't recognize him. That is Maya. Anything we see that appears to be of value, if it is without relation to me, has no reality, known to be my illusion, the energy, that reflection which appears to be in darkness. So if we see something not related to Krishna, if we think, oh, this has nothing to do with Krishna, that's falsity. Krishna is totally truth. And yet we see here, from the point of view of truth with a small t, that Krishna is bending the truth here a little bit, right? Sacrificing his own promise. Sva nigamam apayaya, that he gave up his own truthfulness, that Krishna said, I won't take up a weapon. I mean, I'll help Arjuna, but I won't take up a weapon, right? There was that story where Krishna's in bed, and Duryodhana sits at his head, and Arjuna sits at his feet, and Krishna wakes up and first sees Arjuna at his feet. What would you like? You want me or my army? Arjuna says, if you get me, I won't have any weapons. You get me weaponless, or you get my army? And Arjuna says, I'd rather have you weaponless. And Duryodhana's like, what a fool, you know, I get the army. Stupid Arjuna. So Krishna had made this promise, I'm not going to take up a weapon. And Krishna broke his promise. So his quality of truthfulness. Of course, one can say that a chariot wheel isn't really a weapon. But that's kind of cheating, isn't it? You know, it's kind of, well, you know, come on. What's a weapon? A weapon is some tool that you use in battle. So although the chariot wheel isn't created to be a weapon, you know, if I hit you over the chair with a head and it goes to court, they're going to consider the chair a weapon, even though the chair manufacturer had no intention of it being used that way. So although a chariot wheel is not technically a weapon, he was using it as a weapon. So he kind of broke his promise without breaking his promise. He's really good at that. That's Krishna's quality of clever, that he does many things at once. But, you know, really, he broke his truthfulness and he gave up his good dresser quality. Why? For Bhakti Vatsal. And that's also a demonstration of love. A demonstration of real love is that I'm willing to sacrifice anything in order to please my beloved. Again, we can't imitate this. If we try to imitate this without being on that platform, we will eventually explode with our own needs. And also, we can't have this with another jiva unless we have it with Krishna first. So if someone's going to say, well, I'm just going to have this total self-sacrificing mood with my wife or my husband or my child or my mother or my friend or my company, it won't work. Eventually, we'll become frustrated and resentful and unhappy. And also that relationship with that jiva separated from Krishna, it won't satisfy us. We'll become, like Prabhupada talks about the man who wants to take sannyas. And he says, I've done so much for the family. You know, I fulfilled all my obligations for the family. Now I want to take sannyas. And the wife will say, what have you done? You haven't done anything. So this is, you know, our general, what happens in this world. You know, that if I give and 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 give, even to the point of sacrificing my principles, you know, so we can give our time, we can give our energy, we can give our thought, we can give our talents, we can give our youth, but the greatest thing to give is our principles, to sacrifice our principles, some principle that we hold dear, that I'm always a truthful person, and for the sake of the person that I love, I give up my truthfulness, or in this case, Krishna always wants to be dressed meticulously for the sake of his devotees. He abandons that. So that's the most painful thing. The gopis, of course, do that. They give up their principles. The gopis are very dharmic people, right? The sadhana city gopis, in their previous lives, some of them were the personified Upanishads. They embody dharma. Or they were the Munichari gopis. They were great sages who were completely wedded to dharma and right conduct. They were extremely so. There's no question of them deviating from ordinary principles of proper behavior on this material platform. But they were willing to abandon that for Krishna. They were willing to abandon what people thought of them, right? How much, you know, how much most of us care about what our society thinks of us. They were willing to abandon their vow to serve their husbands. You know, in a modern day, that doesn't mean much to us because people do that left and right and center and all over the place. Oh, he's on his fourth marriage. You know, we just kind of roll our eyes and go on with life. But if someone's really dedicated to principles, you know, each of us have our principles, that we're saying, I'm not going to sacrifice this principle. It doesn't matter. I'll give up my relationship with someone rather than sacrifice this principle. But when it comes to ultimate love, you'll sacrifice your principle for the person you love. We see this pervertedly. You know, a woman who gets involved in her husband's criminal activities or whatever because she loves him. Of course, materially, again, it's not going to help you. Like, materially, having an illicit lover is not, it's going to degrade you. It's not that you can imitate these sort of things on the material level. But that's the ultimate sacrifice. My point is that giving up one's principles is the ultimate sacrifice that you can make for someone that you love. So the devotees do that for Krishna, particularly the gopis, but not only the gopis. Maharaj Yudhisthira also told a lie in order to please Krishna. Right? Vasudev told a lie in order to please Krishna. Vasudev had told Kamsa, I'll give you all my children. But you know what? He didn't. Came to the eighth child, and he was told, bring this child to Gokula and exchange him with Nandamarja's daughter, and he did it. And he lied to Kamsa. He said, Kamsa, I've had a daughter. That was a lie. Right? And even Vasudev was willing to take his best friend's and half-brother's child, Nandamarja's daughter, and put her in danger. You know, he hoping that Kamsa wouldn't kill a girl, but you know, Kamsa wasn't exactly somebody you could count on to do the right thing. And he's risking Nandamarja's daughter. Nandamarja's his best friend and his half-brother. They have the same father. And so he's doing that. Why? He's sacrificing his principle of family loyalty. He's sacrificing his truthfulness out of love for Krishna. That's a very high love. Dasarath was not willing to sacrifice his truthfulness for the sake of Ram. He was not willing to sacrifice Kaikeyi for the sake of Ram. when Kaikei said, I'll kill myself, he thought. He said, okay, I can't let that happen. I can't break my promise. I can't let Kaikei commit suicide. So Dasara's love wasn't at that level. Again, this can't be imitated materially. That would be a very big mistake. Don't sacrifice our principles for some other jiva. In fact, materially, it's the opposite. Materially, we should be willing to sacrifice everything for Krishna. Not that we sacrifice Krishna for jiva. But my point is that Krishna also does this. Krishna also sacrifices his principles out of love for his devotees. Krishna also sacrifices his qualities out of love for his devotees. Because Krishna, the greatest enjoyment for Krishna is this loving exchange. There's no greater pleasure for Krishna. Although Krishna is the reservoir of pleasure, and this pleasure of loving exchange is Krishna, he also wants to experience it. That's why Krishna manifests as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He wants to experience what is it like to be a woman madly in love with him. Right? Generally, when women are madly in love, they're a little bit more nuts, shall we say, than men who are madly in love. They lose themselves more. They're more irrational. All of these things we're talking about are irrational. Right? A rational person says, no, I'm going to be truthful. Heck with this relationship. These are all irrational, emotional, spontaneous. You're not thinking, I'm going to drop my cloth on the way to sleep. No, it just happens. Just like what happens with our emotions in this world, they just sort of happen. You know, why did I say that? Why did I do that? And generally, our spontaneous emotions in this world just get us into trouble. But there's some reality to that spontaneous emotion. So all of this, of course, we could talk also a lot more about the mood of the kshatriyas, as Prabhupada mentioned to you, that Krishna is also in the mood of a kshatriya. This was noted in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita when Gop Kumar is in Dwarka and he's still not happy. And Uddhava and Narada are speaking about how to deal with him. And Narada says to Uddhava, why don't you be the one to explain to Gop Kumar? And he said, no, I'm just kshatriya. You're a brahmana. You should explain. And Narada says, what's this nonsense about vanashram here in the spiritual world? This is all the modes of material nature. And Uddhava says, no, that's Krishna's mood. Krishna here in Dwarka, he wants to have a mood of kshatriya. That's his enjoyment. So here Prabhupada says, kshatriya cannot tolerate insults on the principle of fighting. So this is also Bhishma's mood. How dare you say I'm not fighting as well as I could be? I'm not going to tolerate that. You know, a brahmana wouldn't really care. If you say to a brahmana, you know, you're not fighting enough, they'd say, well, so what? It wouldn't matter to them. But kshatriyas have this kind of pride. Everyone has some sort of pride. A Brahmin has a different kind of pride. Brahmana would react to a different kind of insult. But kshatriyas react to this insult. You're not fighting enough. What's wrong with your reputation? So Bhishma becomes energized by that. Different people get energized in different ways. Just like when I was a teacher, if I said to my students, okay, we have this assignment to do, and it's really easy, you shouldn't have any trouble with it. So a bunch of the kids would go, great. And some of the other kids would say, well, if it's easy, why should I do it? Why bother doing anything that's easy? And conversely, if I said, okay, we have an assignment today, kids, it's going to be a little bit of a challenge. So some of the kids would go, great, a challenge. And others go, well, if it's going to be hard, why should I bother? So different people are energized in different ways. And kshatriya is energized by challenges. And we have to say also by insults. When the kshatriyas meet each other on the battlefield, one of the first things that they generally do is exchange insults because that energizes them to fight. You know, if nobody's insulting me, why should I fight? I'll just go on with my day, you know. But if someone insults me, then I'm going to want to punch them in the nose. And because we've agreed to fight, therefore they'll insult each other. And they'll particularly insult each other about their manliness and their courage and their fighting ability. So that's what Duryodhana is doing here. He's basically calling Bhishma a wimp. He's saying, oh, you have some affection. You know, of course, nowadays, men are really criticized for being in this kind of macho mood and saying, you know, that men should also have their affectionate side. But especially when men are meeting on the battlefield, So affection is a liability, and it's not exactly something to be proud of. So Duryodhan is saying, hey, you're being affectionate. You know, you're letting that get in the way of your fighting. So that was an insult on being affectionate instead of aggressive. So Krishna is also in that mood. Krishna is also, it's not only that Bhishma is in this mood and Duryodhan is in this mood, but Krishna in a transcendental way is also in this mood. But I'm a fighter. How dare you attack my friend? I am going to go and protect my friend, even if it means I have to give up my principles. So this whole discussion we're having here is predicated on the understanding that the ultimate manifestation of God is a person. And although we've been discussing these ideas from, to some extent, a logical platform and using analogies from our own material experience, on the other hand, it's not, what we're describing is not really something logical in the sense of mathematics or physics or chemistry. You know, if God is simply the Brahman or God is simply the Paramatma, then you can talk about him in terms of laws. You can talk about him in a detached philosophical way. But because God is a person, philosophy is not the main way of understanding a person. Just think of, if someone wants to know something, so I don't know if any of you experience this, but I'm sometimes asked to give a brief biography that someone can use to introduce me, that they'll post on the web, okay, Urmila is going to be speaking, this is something about who Urmila is, or they're going to introduce me someplace. And sometimes they'll get it off of Wikipedia, which is not the most accurate description, or, you know, they'll ask me to write something. And what does someone look for in a biography? They look generally for your...
What happened? Well, let's see where she is. Urmila has a problem. Oh, it looks like their house went down because Nitya went down at the same time. Let's see if we can come back right away. Difficulty. Oh, here she comes back.
Being one of those, you know, little biographical snippets. Very little. I mean, the way to understand a person is through narrative. A full biography is a story. It's in the form of a narrative. It's not in the form of philosophy. You're not going to understand who Martin Luther King Jr. is. You're not going to understand who Elizabeth Taylor is. You're not going to understand anybody just by reading, you know, okay, Elizabeth Taylor was in this movie and that movie. She married, what was it, 7 or 8 times. She had so many children. You won't get to know her at all. Right? But you have to read a story. How does she react? How does she behave? How does she behave in this situation? How does she behave in that situation? Then you can understand something about her, the person. Therefore, the real way to understand God, if God is a person, then the real way to understand God is through narrative and poetry. Narrative, poetry, song. That's how you're going to understand. Philosophy's there. Okay, he does this, he does that. He has this power, he has that power. But that's not really going to help one to understand one. It's helpful, it's essential, it's not to be neglected, especially in the beginning. But too much emphasis on that, Prabhupada will say, will actually hamper us. You know, if I'm trying to have a relationship with another person and I'm focused primarily on their accomplishments rather than their story, then I'm going to lose something. I'm not going to really connect with the person at all. Oh, you're the person who does this or that. You do this. That puts you in awe and reverence, but it doesn't really touch the person. And we're not looking at the stories. We shouldn't be looking at these stories about Krishna. Also, from the point of view of just philosophy and accomplishments, just sort of in a neutral way.
the lila itself, it's not that the facts of the lila are what's so much important. That, you know, first Krishna did this, and then Krishna did that, and then this devotee did this, and what happened in this or that chronological order, you know, like some kind of trivia game. Just like at one point in ISKCON, there was a trivia game on Krishna book that was being done at the Gurukula, and Prabhupada stopped it. And we find sometimes, I've seen some of the exams for Bhakti Shastri students are like a trivia game. You know, okay, what's in the fourth sentence of the second paragraph of such and such purport? But that's not really what it's about. Even with Krishna's leelas, it's not just that, well, I've memorized that Krishna does this and Krishna does that. The leelas are a backdrop. They're a platform for exchanges that give us a window into what kind of person Krishna is. If Krishna is a personality, then he's a certain kind of personality. Of course, Rupa Goswami gives us four descriptions of Krishna's personality, and those four descriptions are paradoxical, that some of those descriptions seem to be the opposite. The Dira Lalita seems to be opposite of the Dira Prasanta, and the Dira Datta tends to be opposite of the Dira Datta. And then Rupa Goswami takes those four that he's given in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu and in Ujjvala Nilamani, he explains that there are even more divisions of those different aspects of Krishna's personality. But understanding Krishna's personality is not just doing some sort of philosophical analysis of what is a Dhira Prasanta, what is a Dhira Datta, but it's meditating on these pastimes, like this pastime with Bhishma, so that we come to appreciate Krishna. Basically, so that we come to fall in love with Krishna. Just like people read a story about Elizabeth Taylor and they become devoted to her and they'll collect Elizabeth Taylor memorabilia or, you know, Michael Jackson memorabilia or whatever. So one should become attached to Krishna. How amazing Krishna is, that he's so full of love with his devotees. You know, in one sense, Krishna is completely neutral and self-satisfied. But yet he has a personality, and he has a personality that likes to lose himself, that likes to abandon his principles out of love. He likes giving the ultimate sacrifice. You know, we may think about surrender to Krishna, that surrender to Krishna means that I do the ultimate sacrifice. When we think of Krishna as the enjoyer or the transcendental autocrat, we may be thinking about, in this world, some sort of dictator or some sort of exploiter who's just enjoying us, and we have to sacrifice everything for them. But Krishna is enjoying sacrificing everything for his devotee. He's sacrificing even his beloved qualities and his beloved principles. In one sense, you can say by sacrificing his truthfulness, he's sacrificing his very self. He is truth out of love for his devotee. So by meditating on these pastimes, we develop attachment to Krishna, Maya Shakta Manaparta. We develop attachment. When we develop attachment to Krishna, not attachment to the idea of Krishna, not attachment to the philosophy, not attachment to, okay, I'm going to be a devotee, but really attachment to the person Krishna, to allow ourselves to become attached and affectionate to Krishna, to fall in love with Krishna, to say, like Rukmini said after just hearing about Krishna, wow, that's somebody I really want to meet. That's someone I really want to have a relationship with. Then that is what is the essence of our Krishna consciousness. So generally during the day, we're meditating on so many things other than Krishna. We're meditating on our own personality and qualities, or meditating on the personality and qualities of other jivas separate from Krishna. But these stories in the Bhagavatam are meant to turn our minds and our hearts, manmana bhavamad bhakto, they're meant to make us a real devotee, where we say, wow, I'd really like to be there on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, seeing Krishna abandon his truthfulness and his immaculate dressing in order to please Bhishma and Arjuna.
And I'd want to see this loving relationship between Bhishma and Arjuna, where Bhishma takes a promise out of Kshatriya pride, and Krishna picks up a chariot wheel that's a weapon, but not a weapon, just to please his devotee. So, you know, I really want to see that. I really want to experience that. I really want to be part of that. I want to somehow or other be connected with Krishna. Krishna's so wonderful. I want to do something to make him happy. Like, that's the essence of love, that I want to do something to make my beloved happy. I'm thinking about them. In this world, I tend to be wrapped up in what I want. And I'm hardly even aware of what the people around me want, even if they're my near and dear family members. I have very little awareness, even when they try to tell me, this is what I want. It may not register. I'm so wrapped up in myself. But we want to get so attached to Krishna that we are thinking, what does Krishna want? How can I just lose myself in love for this most wonderful person? So sometime during the day today, when we pick up whatever we're going to do for our service after the class is over, we'll go on to some next activity that we're doing in Krishna's service. And to meditate in that activity, I'm doing this for Krishna, who's the most wonderful Lord. How can I do this to please Krishna? How can I do this to make Krishna happy? So thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.
Thank you, Mother Amila. Any questions or comments?
Very nice class. I only caught the end of it. It was excellent.
I caught the whole thing. It was too clear to come up with a question. It's
well,
a beautiful class.
I have a trivia question.
Uh-oh. Oh, no.
Does that mean I didn't hear anything? So, Nigama Kalpatararagamta. So, Nigama, that's Vedic literature, is what someone says, Swa Nigama. So, what does the Nigama mean?
I'm not a Sanskrit scholar.
Oh, okay.
Wrong person to ask that trivia question.
Okay.
I do know that Sanskrit, just like every other language, has multiple meanings and multiple shades of meaning for each word. And that the context of the word is also significant.
Well, I would like to make a comment. You know, we were discussing once or twice, one time even in length, about when Srila Prabhupada stopped with, like, the Krishna bowl. And we came up with different things, you know, why Srila Prabhupada had done that, you know, why he was so strong on it. But the explanation that you gave here is really wonderful. I think it goes to the core of the problem, which we may have missed, at least I did. But, yeah, the point is not to just take even the pastimes of Krishna just as if you're accumulating your store of knowledge, maybe to impress people or whatever. But rather to deepen your attachment for Krishna so that you want to know him more and more, your attachment grows. That I've never heard it stated in that way.
Well, that's also when Prabhupada says that the stories and the scriptures are not presented chronologically. He says that the stories and the scriptures, I can probably find that if I'm just actually reading it not very long ago, that the stories and the scriptures are compilations of stories that happen in different yugas and different planets and even in different universes. And they're not in chronological order, but that they're presented in order to teach some principle or have us enter into something. They're just a vehicle. I mean, what happens externally in the Leela is meant to develop love or to express love. And what's really important, that what's going on there, is how the relationships are developing. Let's see if I can find this.
Okay.
No, I can't find it. Anyway, Prabhupada says that the activities of the described in the Bhagavatam were taking places in different yugas, different planets, and different universes, and they're not in chronological order, but they're given for entering into a truth. So in the same way with these pastimes, it's not exactly the one wants to. I mean, of course, we're meditating on the externals of the pastime, what did Krishna do, what did Bija do, but it's not so much that, it's how we're officiating them as a person.
Yeah. I was going to just ask one other question on those lines. You know, Krishna describes in the seventh chapter how...
Oh, one thing. Here, I found it. It's in Bhagavatam 1928. Incidents mentioned in the Vedic literatures, such as the Puranas, Mahabharata, and Ramayana, are factual historical narrations that took place sometime in the past, although not in any chronological order. Such historical facts, being instructive for ordinary men, were associated without chronological reference. Besides that, they happen on different planets, nay, in different universes, and thus the description of the narrations is sometimes measured by three dimensions. We are simply concerned with the instructive lessons of such incidents, even though they are not in order by our limited range of understanding. So this is in the same chapter. This is in the purport to 1928, and we're just reading 1937.
Yes, we just read that, and we had a discussion about it kind of at length. This is very good. If I could just ask one other question in this regard. When Krishna describes, you know, the Artarti, the Jigyasu, you know, all these persons that are coming to him with material motives but are still approaching him, in the same way, when we hear the Vedic literatures, like, for instance, the Bhagavatam class, Bhagavad Gita class that we're having now is so attractive. But is our attraction because we're not on a pure platform also, you know, like, for instance, contaminated by wanting to get, you know, more and more knowledge? You know, we like trivia. In other words, until we come to the pure platform, is even our attraction polluted?
Of course. But it depends, what do you want to look at? Do you want to look at the part that's pure, or you want to look at the part that's polluted? What do you want to put your attention to? So, of course it is. I mean, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that Adushraddha is an atomic particle of prema. And in Madhurya Kadambini, it's really nice if you want to see a chart on Madhurya Kadambini, which I might have just given you part of that, for NOI 7 and 8, that in the beginning of our Krishna consciousness, our selfishness is absolute, and our attraction to Krishna is just a trace, it's a particle. But that's a real particle. So yes, if you say, I'm not pure, then by definition, your attraction is not pure. Has to be, by definition. So if I'm not experiencing transcendental ecstasy at every moment, then I can understand that I'm not pure. And if I'm not pure, that means that everything that I'm doing is impure. All of my motives are impure. All of my actions are impure. But so what? So what? That's expected. Just like somebody told me about a devotee that I know. Said, oh, this so-and-so devotee, she's very attracted to taking care of the deities, but she's always finding fault with other devotees. And I said, well, she's a very new devotee. She's just started Krishna consciousness about a year or two ago. She just got first initiation. And that's what we expect from a Kanistha devotee.
That they're going to be very attached to the deities, but they don't know how to treat the other devotees. That's the symptom of a new devotee. So what? And my friends say, well, won't that hurt her Krishna consciousness? I said, no, it means that, you know, she's not going to be really experiencing the ultimate of Krishna consciousness. And if she continues in that way, then it will start to be a problem. But to be that way in the beginning is expected. You know, I'm here at my son's house, and there's children of various ages, and we expect different behaviors from the different children. So for a two-year-old to just take the toys out of another child's hand, that's not a character fault. Or even if it is, it's not taken seriously. So depending on where we are in our Krishna consciousness, our impurities are not really taken very seriously. Now, if we maintain material attachments in spite of hearing so many instructions on this matter, if, you know, you're 20 years old and you're still pulling things out of other people's hands when you want them, that's taken seriously.
That was good. Okay.
You know, what's really nice about some of the talk that you gave, both on the personal aspect of Krishna and what you just explained, it's not logic so much as it is common sense. And some of the devotees that I'm attracted to are grounded in common sense. And a lot of times that leads to realizations. You know, it's not that you have to, I mean, it's very good to be able to be Shastric and to reference everything you're saying. But I've also met devotees that overdo that, and then they just string a lot of slokas together, and they don't really understand something basic about what they're talking about. You know, and the Prabhupada says thing, you know, where somebody's trying to get over on another person. So yeah. I appreciate common sense. I appreciate that. Srila Srila Maharaj once said, I take my stand on spiritual common sense. And, you know, so I always appreciate that when I hear someone speaking. And it's something like Gopa, he likes this idea of axioms, you know, something that's so obvious that it doesn't really need a proof. You know, it stands on its own.
Thank you. Well, I mean, what I am saying is in the Shastra, these descriptions of how the devotees gradually, Prabhupada says, gradually and proportionately get rid of their impurities, you know, and that you don't criticize someone who's in the shower, who's still dirty.
Mm-hmm.
So this is also from our acharyas. And that's true for ourselves also. You know, if you've been rolling out in the mud for a few billion years and you've got all this hard caked on mud that's as hard as diamonds and you're in the process of scraping it off, you don't hate yourself. You don't say, my God, I'm still so dirty. You just, or I think of a pot. Any of you who've ever cooked, maybe some of you here have never cooked anything in your life, but any of you who've ever cooked, if you've ever really burnt something on the bottom of a pot, I mean, really, really burnt it, so that you're not even going to clean up your pot in one time, or as they say in the UK, at one go. You know, you're going to scrub it a little, and then you're going to soak it again, and then you're going to scrub it a little, and then you're going to soak it again, and you may even take days. I had one pot, and I burned so badly, it took me a month of a little bit here and there to clean it. And, you know, you're in the cleaning process. You see the dirt coming off. And it may take a while before you see some glimmer of metal. You know, seeing some glimmer of metal, and that's coming to the stage of Nista, you know, Anarjana Vritti, where you start to see the self. And you're like, wow, there's actually something spiritual under all that garbage. You know, but you don't get discouraged just because that. It takes some time. We were talking about that on Saturday, you know, rubbing the wood. First there's smoke, and there's a spark. So I think that what's good to know about that what we're doing is contaminated is to have some humility and some honesty and not be proud of what we're doing compared to someone else, or not think we're doing some great thing, or really consider that Krishna owes us anything for the so-called service that we're doing, which is, sorry to say, mostly self-serving. And it, you know, it's enthusiasm, patience, and confidence. Patience with one's own defects, yet enthusiasm to go on, and confidence that, you know, at some point all the gunk's going to be off the bottom of the pot.
It's so nice. Thank you.
Yeah, I have a comment.
Yeah.
As I understand it, the idea of Krishna consciousness is not to become liberated or to become purified, but merely just to cultivate love God. Is this right?
Yes. Yes and no. So, you can't, in one sense you can separate those, in another sense you can't. If I'm using Krishna to become purified and become liberated, because I'm thinking, okay, in that way, I'll be happy. That's a combination. However, having said that, it's a lot better to want to become purified and become liberated than want to be continue as an enjoyer in the material world. Prabhupada says a philosopher is better than a laboring man. So if your motive is that you want to become purified and you want to become liberated, that's in sattva-gun. That's in the mode of goodness. The mode of goodness is a springboard for spiritual life, like an airport is a springboard for going to another country. Now, just getting to the airport isn't enough. You have to leave the airport. You have to. It's interesting. If you want to fly someplace, you have to first go to an airport, but you also have to leave the airport. So for a beginner wanting to be purified and wanting to be liberated, even on a selfish platform, is not bad at all. In fact, it's pretty good. But at a certain point, once you become just in love of God. Now, in order to love Krishna, I have to be purified and liberated. I can't love Krishna if I'm conditioned. It's a contradiction in terms. Condition means that I think I'm the Lord. I can't have Krishna as my Lord if I've got me there. If I'm sitting on the altar, there's no room for Krishna to sit there. So I have to become purified. I have to become liberated. But the question is, am I using Krishna for my liberation, or is my motive for purification in order to love Krishna properly? That's the difference. You know, if your husband is coming home and you get bathed and dressed because you want him to be pleased with you, if you want him to feel happy when he opens the door and says, oh, what a beautiful wife I have, that's very different than if you want to go out and show off to your friends how beautiful your dress is and your husband is like another kind of ornament lying on your arm.
Hmm.
You know, are you using Krishna for your purposes, or are you working to please Krishna? But it's included. It's included. It's like vegetarianism is included. Purification is included. So my motive isn't to become purified. My motive is to love Krishna. But I have to become purified in order to love Krishna. There's no, you know, like if I'm going to offer Krishna some food, I have to offer him purified food. Ideally, you know, first of all, it's got to be vegetarian, no onions, no garlic, no eggs. Then better than that is it's organically grown and grown locally. That's explained in the story of Dhruva Maharaj. Things that are local and in season are nice, the best things to offer to the Lord. Then higher than that, it's something I grew myself, you know, or something devotees have grown. So the more purified the thing that I'm offering, the nicer of an offering, the more Krishna is going to accept it. But what am I ultimately offering to Krishna? I'm not ultimately offering to Krishna patram pushpam palam toya. Yome bhakti prayachachi. I'm offering my bhakti. I'm atmanivedanam. I'm ultimately offering myself. So how am I going to offer myself if I'm contaminated? Then I'm not a fit offering. I can't offer a contaminated self. If some servant comes to you and says, I'd like to work for you as a servant, but I'm a thief, would you hire him? And what kind of an offering is this? You know, please, I'm going to offer myself to you, but I'm going to steal your stuff. You know, that's not much of an offering. You know, you go to some woman and say, my dear, I'd like to marry you, but please know that I'm going to have at least 10 affairs every year. I mean, how is that an offering? So to offer ourselves to Krishna, we have to be concerned with purification and liberation, but not because by purification and liberation, I'll finally be free of all this misery.
That's like the child who says, I'm sorry, just to get out of the corner. Now, if you've hurt somebody, you need to say you're sorry to reestablish the relationship. So are you saying, I'm sorry, because then you'll get out of the corner and you won't suffer anymore? Are you saying, I'm sorry, genuinely, because you have some empathy for the pain you've caused yourself and the other person and you want to reestablish the relationship? In either case, I'm sorry is required. So when we say we don't care about liberation, the devotee is saying, I don't care if I have to stay in the corner. I've offended you, and if you want to put me in time out forever, that's fine. I deserve that. But I'm hoping that you're willing to reestablish a relationship with me, even if I still have to stay in the corner. Whereas those who are interested in liberation, you know, they just want to get out of the corner.
Thank you much.
That was wonderful.
Thank you so much, you and I.
Anything else? I could take one more.
Tarini was trying to ask a question. She kept on coming in Nietzsche's account.
Oh. Oh, well, she can just ask me something here.
So.
Okay. Yeah, okay, I think we'll end here. Thank you very much. All glory to Srila Prabhupada.
Thank you, Mataji.
Haribo.
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 Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Haribo.
Haribo.